The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We are going to switch it up tonight. We are going to do a series called Killing Time, where we discuss a random non-baseball topic. And we're in the slow season now. That's why we're doing this. There's not a lot of buzz. A lot of the free agents are picked over. The Red Sox, I'm guessing, are mostly exploring the trade market right now. So we're just kind of waiting for news. And as news develops, we'll be here to cover it as always. I would expect at least one baseball show a week and then one from the Killing Time series, which we're going to get really creative with. And I would expect this, like I said, once a week through, I don't know, most of the way through spring training. So I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Doug Aitchison, and we are going to discuss our favorite 1990s pro wrestlers, WWE, WCW, and then in the second part of the segment, we will get into some of our favorite pay-per-views.
Yeah.
So this isn't going to be for everyone, and we know it. I mean, some of these could be music-related, and some of you guys are going to love that but hate this, or vice versa. But we're going to try to find some inclusive stuff. But Doug and I kind of grew up in the 90s. And, you know.
Just grew up on wrestling.
What a time. Yeah. What a time to be a wrestling fan back then.
You couldn't go to school without being told to suck it.
Yeah, exactly. Or do the, you know, the sign with your arms. That's funny. So you got into it with your brothers.
I did, yeah. I pretty much was born into it, because I have older brothers. So there's actually, I was born in 91, and Survivor Series 93 was in Boston. And my dad brought my brothers, and if you watch it, you can see them on screen the whole time. They're like six rows up. So I was too little to go to that one, you know, by the time I could watch, I was watching. I grew up with it my whole life. And even the ones that I missed, you know, my dad had everything on VHS, recorded everything. So I just grew up, I watched it like every day when I was growing up.
One of my mom's best friends ran a daycare, and she had a son that was close to my age. He was probably two grades above me, but he got me into it, and we would have like wrestling matches. All that, and I'd get the crap kicked out of me because he was way bigger, and you know, that's what a 90s childhood is. And my brothers kind of were into it a little, but not as fanatical as I was, so it wasn't a family thing like it was for you. It would have been more fun. So we're gonna kick this off with a draft, and Doug and I are gonna pick our six favorite. We'll take turns. So once they're picked, they're picked. You know, you might snipe me. You might take one of my favorites, or vice versa. So, as some of you may know, I do a cribbage related podcast, and we do drafts on there. And it could be food related, it could be movie related. So this is kind of something I'm used to, and we flip a coin to decide who's gonna get the first pick. So I'm going to have you you pick it. So what are you going, heads or tails?
Tails.
All right. Oh, it's heads.
Oh.
I'm going to take the first pick.
Okay.
I think I've probably said this. If you're a diehard listener of this podcast, it's probably came up once or twice. Huge Bret the Hitman Hart fan. You know, I was grounded for half of my childhood for putting my brothers in the sharpshooter. And just so many epic matches, you know, WrestleMania 97 with Stone Cold, one of the more historic matches of all time.
It's my favorite match of all time.
I'm not going to say my favorite Bret Hart match because we're going to get to that pay-per-view later on.
That's fair.
But yeah, just so many great ones. And he came up the old school way, was a tag team champion, intercontinental champion.
Yep.
Beat Mr. Perfect for that.
Yep.
You know, and held that. I just learned this a week or so ago. He's the only wrestler in that era who held the Winged Eagle championship belt 5 times.
Wow.
Nobody else did. Hogan had some of the different 80s versions. Yeah. And I'm trying to think of who had it multiple times. I just can't remember.
Yeah, Undertaker not many
had it. Yeah. Yeah.
There was a lot of one-time champs during that time.
Yeah. And that's my favorite.
That's the best belt too.
Yeah, I would say that one and the Intercontinental belt. Yes. Like the 90s belts were the best. Now definitely. They're just these huge hunks of metal.
I know.
I'm sure kids today are into them, but
I'm sure. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, yeah, Bret Hart, it's just the perfect pick.
I'll say this though. I watch a lot of shoot interviews, especially where I drive a truck.
Yeah, yeah.
So, or I listen to him rather, obviously I don't watch stuff in the truck, but, but he does complain a lot and it kind of gets old.
Post career hasn't been the best. I will say that.
I mean, he has the coolest story of all time. Like nobody's going to have a Montreal screw job.
Right. And no one knocked out Vince.
Exactly. Right. So
he always has that.
He's got two cool stories, but I think he could just say more about some great matches he had. Like, you know, I mean, he praises the Undertaker a lot and some other things. And
I mean, he was so pivotal to so many things. He actually created the ladder match.
Right.
He was right. He told them, you know, they used to do this thing in Canada. It was a lot. They'd put the belt up and they'd have a ladder match. And it never happened in WWE before ever, or WWF at the time. And then the first one was Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon was the first one ever. And it was all Bret's idea.
Yeah. I heard a story that SummerSlam 92 was supposed to be in the United States. It got moved to England. But had it been in the United States, Bret would have dropped the title to Shawn in a ladder match.
Yeah.
But the, you know, plans got switched and then, you know, Shawn and Razor had that big one. Yeah.
Yep. Bret would have been my number one pick for sure.
Oh, he would have. Oh, okay.
100%.
Oh,
so,
I would have.
So,
good thing I won the coin toss.
I know. So, it's a very personal pick. When I was a kid, my dad ran the food service at Fenway, you know, he ran the restaurant, the buffet and everything. And he had us come in for a game, me and my brothers. He had us come in for a game one time, like 100 times, and we're just chilling. We used to get to go to the 600 Club, it was at the time, sit in the restaurant and just kind of chill, watch the games when we were little. And he comes down. He's like, all right, guys, here, come get some food. I have a friend that's going to eat lunch with you guys. And we walked up, and it was Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh, nice.
Sitting there, and me and my brothers got to have lunch with him and spend like a little some time with him, and it was the greatest day of our lives. And and I know we never forgot it. And since that day, you know, he was our guy forever.
The cool thing about Bret also was he was the first guy after the Hogan era and really the whole 1980s where they didn't have a big, massive muscle head guy. Like, I mean, when he was the Intercontinental Champion, he was the stereotypical Intercontinental Champion, smaller guy, not super great on the microphone. And when he beat Ric Flair, which was at a house show, if it was on TV, I didn't get to see it at the time. I have seen it on YouTube since. But even as a 9-year-old in 1992, when he beat Flair for the title, I knew it was different. I'm like, this is different from the Hulk Hogan type guys. And I think that's another reason why I liked him. And as a kid, I was kind of on the smaller side. All my friends were bigger than me. You know, I was shorter, skinnier, you know? So,
he was just the best in-ring performer ever. The excellence of execution.
And the debate for life is, you know, who is better, Brett or Sean, I will die on the hill every time.
100%. 100%. Sean's great.
Yeah.
You know, Sean's great in the ring, great performer. But no, Brett created moves. He did so many things. He flawlessly never hurt anybody, took care of all his opponents, even when he didn't like them.
You know, That's true. He always prided himself on how safe he was. And then, ironically, his career ended because he was recklessly kicked in the back of the head by Bill Goldberg.
Right.
Yeah, who will not be on my list, by the way.
No, I won't be mentioning Goldberg.
Okay. Goldberg did have a cool entrance song, though.
He had his run, and it was cool.
Yeah, he just put people in wheelchairs, practically. Right. So who's your first pick?
All right, so my first pick, there's no other way to go. Right? It's really the GOAT. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay. He would have been my second. Yeah.
You know, there's no other way to go. He changed the business 100%. I mean, WWE was going down, WCW was crushing it. And for good reason. If you go back and watch, you know, WCW was putting out a better product like 95, 96, 97-ish, and then Stone Cold wins the King of the Ring, says Austin 316, says I just whooped your ass, right? Or just off the cuff. It becomes the biggest selling shirt of all time. It becomes everything, and it changes the business forever. And he didn't have as long a run as a lot of guys did, but he had the hottest run of all time, and he was the biggest draw the business ever saw at that time.
Yeah, and so I'll say this. I was a huge Stone Cold fan, and I was probably even more fanatical about him, but it just doesn't tug on my childhood heartstrings.
I get it, yeah.
And unfortunately for my parents, what a hell of a time in my adolescence for Stone Cold to come on. I was like 13, grounded all the time, mouthy as hell, and you know, influenced by Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was always, you know, him being after Vince was like me being after my parents. Like, I never gave my mom the Stone Cold Stunner, but I mean,
maybe a couple of fingers behind closed doors.
yeah, exactly. When she turn around, you know, it was funny. But when that glass shattering sound happened, man, it was so electric.
It was. And you go back and you listen to, you look up like the biggest pops of all time. Most of them are him.
Yeah.
And part of it's that glass shattering. It's, you know, you don't have to wait around to listen to the music for a second to know who it is. The glass shatters, you know who it is. He comes running out. And the place is just insane immediately.
Right. And the other thing too was initially, and I think he was still a heel at the time, I hated his finishing move. I'm like, oh, that's so dumb. But it ended up being one of the more brilliant ones.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with Bret Hart, you know, the sharpshooter takes a couple of seconds. Like you can never really put it on by surprise. Right. Austin could hit the stunner anywhere from any angle. And it ended up becoming this brilliant finishing move. My friends and I would do it on each other at school real quick. Yeah. We'd sneak up and just bam, you know.
Oh yeah. And, I've been stunned a million times. A million times. Two older brothers, and we would just wrestle all the time. And yeah, the stunner was a finishing move we could actually do to each other. So
yeah, and done. Another thing, because it ties in with Bret Hart, their match at WrestleMania 13, which was in Chicago.
Yep.
You know, that wasn't like a great WrestleMania. Like I think that match kind of carried the show. I mean, the main event was okay, but when you have two big guys like that, it's just not going to be a technical match.
Yeah.
But it was so historic because it was a double turn. Austin came into it as a heel, left as a babyface. Brett came in as a babyface, left as a heel. And, you know, people debate like, when did the Attitude Era start? And I think it started with that match. Some people say, well, no, it wasn't until the screw job. But to me, it was always that match was the most, so much history happened and changed course all in that one match.
100%. 100% it did. You can, if you go back and watch, you can see the crowd change. You can feel it change. You can see the cheers starting to go for Austin louder and louder. And then when Brett wins and he holds the hold for longer and he does a little bit of heel stuff, he kicks Austin. And, you know, the crowd turns on him completely, boos him. When he's walking out, people are flipping him off right in his face, you know, and that was it. And Austin had a rocket up his ass after that because Vince saw it and knew this is the guy to really take us to the next level.
It was such a great story because
their feud was great.
They both literally went over in that match. Like it was a submission match. Austin didn't give up. He passed out literally in a pool of his own blood.
Yeah. Ken Shamrock, special referee.
Yeah. And like you said, when Brett started kicking him after the match, like just cheap shotting him, that just kind of sealed it. Like if the crowd wasn't sure he was a heel, they knew it then.
Yeah.
In a Bret Hart shoot interview, I only heard this probably in the last year. Vince was trying to convince him to turn heel, but Brett didn't want to because he was making so much money off merchandise.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you'll only be a heel in the United States, but you'll be a hero everywhere else. And he said, and Brett said he didn't want to. And Vince goes, well, just give me 5 minutes and I'll convince you. He goes, if you stay a babyface, you're going to work with basically Vader. And everybody hated working with Vader because he was like Goldberg. He always hurt people. And there's these stories how he'd never wash his gear and he was always gross and stunk. And so, but then, you know, if you turn heel, you can work against Shawn, you can work against Undertaker. You know, the matches were so much better if he turned heel. So that's what
they did. They did that whole America versus Canada angle. And he had him and Owen and Bulldog. And and it was great. It was great.
And the other thing, it's weird because we're pivoting back to Brett so much.
They're intertwined a lot.
The other thing, though, that I should have mentioned, if they didn't decide to kind of terminate Brett's contract and get him to go to WCW, I really think the Hart Foundation could have somewhat rivaled the NWO. Because you could have had non-Hart people in there if you had to.
Yeah, they had Brian Pillman.
Yeah, for a little while. I think that was the year he passed away.
Yeah.
Austin
and them could have.
They
could have had feuds with Austin. They could have had feuds with DX.
Yeah,
and they did, and they could have kept going. Yeah, it's a shame that it happened that way because Brett could have had a way longer career and done a lot more with a lot more people.
Yeah, and I'm guessing Brett would have held the title to WrestleMania. I mean, it just seemed natural to have an epic rematch 1 year later.
Definitely.
And the other thing too that I've never been able to find out, like Brett won the title for the last time in August of 97 at SummerSlam. And then the screw job was 3 months later at Survivor Series. If they knew they were going to terminate his contract, why did they put the title on him? Why couldn't the Undertaker just keep it?
Yeah. I don't know if at that time, if they even knew, but I think it might even been between that time when Vince said, you know, I can't do this contract anymore, but I don't know. I haven't got that answer either.
Yeah. I don't know. I've always wondered that, but no, none of the shoot interviews ever do it. So,
and last thing on Austin, his first title win was against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 14, Boston, Mass. Mike Tyson, special referee. And I was in attendance for that. Me and my whole family were in attendance for that. And, it was great. One of the best memories I have as a child.
Yeah. It's not the GOAT WrestleMania for me, but it's one that I'll watch like at least once or twice a year.
For sure.
Yeah. I noticed Peacock just pulled everything off of it.
Yeah. Too. It's all on Netflix now.
All the pay-per-views.
Yep.
Oh shit. Okay.
Every Raw and every pay-per-view is on Netflix.
Okay. All right, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I've been trying to cancel Peacock ever since, but they make it so hard. I couldn't even figure out how to do it. The QR code on my TV wouldn't. Never mind. All right. All right. I'm gonna go with my next one, and I'm gonna go with the bad guy, Razor Ramon.
Love that pick.
Yeah, I just. Yeah. He was sort of Steve Austin before Steve Austin in a way.
Sure.
Because he started as a heel, and I don't know where the face turn really happened. Like people, the fans just started liking him. And I think they had to turn him heel. And, you know, they stripped Shawn Michaels of the Intercontinental title. I guess it was drug related, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He went away for a little bit.
And so then they had the battle royal, and the last two would fight for the vacant title. And, you know, he was just the baby face ever since. And, you know, I don't know if his run as Razor was bigger than his Scott Hall run in the NWO. You know, I won't die on the hill for that. But
yeah,
just so many good matches, so many good angles. My favorite match. Everyone will take the ladder match, but
sure, yeah.
I really liked his match with Diesel at SummerSlam with Walter Payton. Special enforcer.
Yeah.
That was you know, probably my favorite Razor match. But
I heard that they were forgetting a couple spots, and Walter Payton remembered everything after like one rehearsal and was actually calling spots for them that they were forgetting. Oh,
I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal. And I didn't really know who he was at the time, but they did such a great job in the lead up that, you know, everybody, you know.
They always did a good job with celebrity, like celebrity matches and stuff involving celebrities.
Yeah.
It's always been a part of it since the first WrestleMania.
If you go and listen to shoot interviews, Scott Hall always has a great shoot interview.
Yeah.
And I think he's really fair in all of them as well. He takes accountability for some of his stuff, but I think he was a really unselfish wrestler throughout his career. He always put guys over. He always did the job.
Yep.
I think
he's the best IC champ. He's probably my favorite Intercontinental champ. Like if you think of 90s Intercontinental champions, he's the first guy I think of.
It's either him or Sean, but I would agree.
His character was just so likable, even if he was heel. It was just, his attire was always awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he had the vest and the rays, and he always had a nice color.
Yeah.
It was great. His character was just great always.
His interviews were always good. And
oh yeah.
There was one, when he was in WCW, he was cutting a promo, and it was somewhere not in the arena, like at a bar. And he goes, and when I show up, I'm going to kick your, and then he goes, he just live. He goes, can we say butt on TNT? they're like, yeah, he's just funny.
He was great.
When he died, I was so sad. I don't think it was like a major shock because he had such a rough lifestyle. Yeah. Apparently, alcohol was his, you know, Achilles heel. And he had quite the run there for 4 or 5 years of sobriety. He got with Diamond Dallas Page, who like really recuperates a lot of wrestlers. Yeah. Jake the Snake was one, and I'm sure there's been some others. He's working with Lex Luger now, just in terms of physical rehab. But
Buff Bagwell.
Oh, Buff Bagwell.
He had to get his leg amputated.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. It seems like he's recovering well.
Yeah, he's doing good. Yeah,
but and I guess like during the pandemic, Scott Hall kind of fell off the wagon and. Mm. That just kind of ended up being this downfall. But but I miss him, and I still, he's probably my favorite shoot interview ever. So,
yeah, he's great. It's great.
All right, who's your next pick?
My next pick is going to be this guy right here, the Dead Man.
The Undertaker?
The Dead Man, right? I'm going the other way. Yep, the Undertaker. Nothing like that. The place going dark, the gong hitting, you know, putting fear into little children. You know, having casket matches and buried alive matches.
He had the most gimmick matches of everyone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. the first Hell in the Cell match, first, you know, casket match, buried alive match. I think his character is probably the greatest character in WWE history. It's just he changed it throughout decades. It changed. He moved into the American Badass at one point. He was riding a motorcycle and he got rid of kind of the dead man stuff. But yeah, he had to change with the times, and he always changed with the times perfectly. And his character, you know, he did it for, you know, 30 years, and he went 20-0 before he lost, or 21-0 before he lost at WrestleMania. And he just had so much, you know, legendary things. He ran the locker room. He was the head of the locker room. And he's just, everyone knows The Undertaker. You know, I think he's just a legendary character.
He does a lot of shoot interviews now, too, that he's retired.
He does now, yeah.
One of my favorite ones is when he kind of bashes Hogan. And spoiler alert, he's not going to be on my list. I hated him. I'm sad that he died. I don't wish on anyone. But when he tells the story about Survivor Series 91 and he won the title that night.
Yeah.
And Hogan was like the corrupt politician, you know, behind the scenes. And I don't think he wanted to give the belt up.
No.
And so The Undertaker did his tombstone perfectly. And Hogan acted like he was paralyzed in the ring.
Yep.
Like his neck got wrenched. And
you got me, brother.
Yeah, that's what he said. And but he was well enough to wrestle like 2 days later at that one off.
He had about that much space between his head and the match.
And apparently Shane McMahon backed The Undertaker,
which
kind of, you know, makes me feel better about it. But yeah, and The Undertaker versus The Undertaker, Survivor Series 94. Yeah. I thought they did a great job with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Hell in a Cell was so good. And
yeah, he had feuds with so many people. Early on, he had a feud with Hogan, obviously. And then he had a great feud with Yokozuna.
Yeah,
they had some great casket matches, and obviously his feud with Mankind was legendary. Paul Bearer was awesome.
Yeah,
you know, the urn was awesome. You know, it would give him power, and his sit up is absolutely legendary.
Yeah, especially early in his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the greatest gimmick wrestler of all time.
Yeah. Has to be.
All right. We're getting deep in the list here. I've got 12 of them. All right. This was kind of the 90s was kind of sort of the end of his run in WCW, but I really have to go he did end in WCW, but as far as his WWF went, 93 was his last year, and I'm going with the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Right.
WrestleMania 8 it was my first WrestleMania, and it's one of my favorites, and he fought Ric Flair, and I remember the lead up to that. That was like my first real the word's like escaping me.
I think like that you remember like
a live program. Yeah. No, it was like the lead up. Like they
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they did like a 2 or 3 month program leading up to it. And, you know, Flair was just such a hateable champion, which to his credit, I mean, that's his job to be hateable.
Right.
And, you know, and he only got the title at the Royal Rumble, but they did the affair angle with Miss Elizabeth. And even as a 9-year-old, I'm like, that mother.
Yeah. You know? Pictures and stuff.
And yeah. And I don't know. It just, he was just such a cool champion. And,
yeah.
I'd gone back and seen his late 80s run when he won the title at WrestleMania 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is supposed to be 90s, but when he dropped the title in 89 at WrestleMania 5 back to Hogan, Bruce Pritchard has said a lot on his podcast that leading up to it, even as a heel champion, business was so hot. Like he was selling out arenas and he was just such a good, I think he was kind of ahead of his time because the, you know, the big musclehead guys like Hogan and Don Morocco and Andre the Giant. And, you know, Randy was agile and could do everything. He could be aerial. He could be technical. And
that's why him and Rick were such good matches.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the chemistry was good. I liked the finishing move, you know, the elbow off the top was pretty good. And so, yeah, I don't know. Savage is,
yeah. I mean, like his outfits were always, you know.
Oh, I know.
Always, like that's always part of it, you know. Like he catches your eye when he walks down. He's got the colors and he's got Miss Elizabeth, who was like the hottest chick ever.
Yeah. You know, it's, I heard Shawn Michaels talk about in an interview recently. I think the interview is like 20 years old, but it was only like recently released. And he was always impressed with the Macho Man's attire. And he goes, "Hey man, who does your attire?" And Savage wouldn't tell him. He goes, I'm not giving up my secret." You know. So it was funny.
Yeah, no, Savage. And then they, you're right. And they kind of gave up on him. And they put him on the cans. They had him doing the, you know, calling, you know, Raws and stuff. And he was like, I still got it. And then he did. And he went to WCW and he had some great years, some great matches in WCW.
Yeah, they put the belt on him a couple of times.
Yeah. And then and he's still the Slim Jim guy to this day.
Yeah.
They're still using him for Slim Jims.
Been gone for 15 years. Yeah. And it surprised me. I've heard Jim Ross say a couple of times on his podcast that he didn't really care for Macho Man. Like the chemistry wasn't good. And apparently Savage was stubborn and wanted to do it his way. But going back and listening, I mean, I've watched WrestleMania 9 a bunch of times and, and I didn't notice anything.
Yeah, no, no. Always good. They always, you know, never showed it in the ring.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
But they said he was very paranoid backstage. He wouldn't let anyone talk to Elizabeth.
I heard that. I heard that. And he'd like lock her in the house so she couldn't get out with some TV dinners. That's what I heard. I kind of hope that's not true. It probably is, but
it's.
But, and when Hogan showed up with the black eye at WrestleMania 9, apparently that was Savage.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Definitely, yeah.
It's too bad we didn't get like a definite answer on that before he died. They're both dead now.
I know. Most of them are.
Both of them took it to the grave, whether it was a jet ski accident or a punch.
I know.
I would have rooted for Savage a million times over on that.
I think it was.
Okay.
I like to think it was at least.
Yeah. I hated Hulk Hogan.
And he was, I know. He's, and Savage, I mean, he was so paranoid. He, when Jake the Snake had his cobra bite him, he made Jake have the cobra bite him first. He said, "If I'm not doing this, I have to watch you get bit by this snake before I do this."
Well, in Savage's defense, I'm not getting bit by any snake.
That's fair. Yeah, it's very fair. Me neither. Absolutely not.
There's very few things I'm afraid of in this world, but snakes is one of them. I like if I found one in the house, I'd scream like a girl. I live in South Carolina and I'm not like a snake expert, but I see them in my yard. I'm like, geez, is this poisonous? Yeah. And I worry about my dogs getting bit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, my brother is terrified of snakes and he swears it's because of that. Saturday morning, he got up to watch wrestling and there was a cobra biting Randy Savage.
I mean, it's pretty traumatic, as a child to see that.
Yeah.
And then SummerSlam 91, when they do the wedding thing, which I thought was stupid. Yeah, I wasn't into that. But then they get jumped by Savage by Undertaker and Jake the Snake. And I think Jake had the snake in that thing. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So who's next on your list?
Next on my list. Let's see. I'm going to go. I think not so. Damn, who am I gonna? It's tough. All right, so I'm gonna go with the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Not probably the most unlikable wrestler backstage after you hear everything. that actually went on. But when I was young, I didn't know any of that.
True. Right?
And Shawn Michaels created D-Generation X, created this, created Suck It, created the Sweet Chin Music. I mean, he was awesome. And he was great in the ring. He was a great character. Whether he was heel, whether he was babyface, he could do it both. And, you know, yeah, he very problematic. Once I got older, I realized a lot of things I didn't know. You know,
not a good guy.
But, you know, not at all. But, you know, when I was a kid, he was awesome. And he was, and I'll never forget his Iron Man match with Bret. And, you know, coming down from the rafters at WrestleMania 12. And, you know, obviously we mentioned the ladder match, and he just has so many matches. And even later in his career, he had some great matches. When he came back in the 2000s and like the late 2000s, he had some great matches. And, you know, he's one of the best to ever do it without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, you can't tell the story of the 1990s without Shawn Michaels. And I was kind of a fan, you know, I enjoyed 1996 when he had the title for most of that, but he was so good as a heel though. Like, he was a natural heel. He made it so easy to hate him.
Yeah. When he turned on Marty Jannetty.
Oh, that's
the best.
That's
he takes him through the Baba glass.
Second greatest heel turn of all time. Number one's obviously Hogan at Bash at the Beach, but man, when he did it, and then Bobby the Brain Heenan was so funny. He's like, that coward Jannetty tried to dive through the window to get away. Like, Bobby Heenan was so, like, I appreciate him way more as an adult on commentary.
Oh, he's so funny.
Like, shit just went over my head as a kid, you know,
yeah,
with him. But, but yeah, that was the barbershop thing was good. And,
when I go back and, you know, I'm watching, you know, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to watch just all the WrestleManias and I'll start at the first one. And you go through them and it's like, well, him and Marty Jannetty were at like WrestleMania 2, 3, I'm pretty sure, or something like that. It's like, he's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, he did the tag team thing. He did the IC, you know, and then he worked his way up to the title.
Yeah. It just like Bret did.
Yep.
Yeah. He did hold the tag title later on with Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
I heard a story that him and Marty Jannetty did win the tag titles one night, but the ring fell apart.
Really? And, oh, man, I don't know that.
Yeah, you haven't. So the top rope came apart. And it just, you can't do, the ring is useless, even if it's just one corner. Like, the ropes just don't stretch.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
And so they tried to make the best of it. The Rockers won the titles, and it wasn't a live show. So, then I guess after, they didn't want to air it because of the ring. And apparently Vince just changed his mind on the whole thing. He's like, you know, maybe they shouldn't have the titles, and they never got them because they were one of the original like high flying tag teams.
Definitely.
And you know, they had cool attire, cool entry music.
Yeah. Cool name.
Yeah. And it just didn't work. And you know, if Marty Jannetty, I always wonder what he could have done. He wouldn't have been as great on the microphone, I guess, as Michaels, but man, he could work as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So glad you didn't take him. I was going to be so sad. I'm just going to say Mick Foley. I think I liked the man.
He's going to be my next.
Okay.
Good pick.
Yeah. When he won the title, and I can't remember if it was Jim Ross or Michael Cole on the microphone, but they didn't say Mankind won the title. They said Mrs. Foley's little boy is now the heavyweight champion. Yeah. That was just such a great call.
So good.
And it was sort of not so much controversial for WWF, but for WCW, because Tony Schiavone gave it away and then lost his entire audience because they wanted to watch Mick Foley win it. Because back then, before the internet, I mean, the internet was kind of big, I guess, by 99, but they would do a live Raw the next day on Monday, and then they do the next Raw one night later but air it the next Monday. So he won it on the taped Raw, which sounds weird to me, but it ended up working brilliantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got the belt and he didn't really have a long run with it, but, no. But, it was good. And his, he was just so goofy and so funny.
Yeah. And he gave you everything. I mean, he gave you three different characters.
Right.
You know, I mean, coming in the Rumble as all three of them was hilarious.
Yeah.
And he did everything. He did everything. He put his body on the line every did anything to, you know, just entertain.
I mean, that Hell in the Cell, I mean, I remember that King of the Ring in 98, and it didn't really have a lot going for it. I think Ken Shamrock won it later that night. And
he did.
And who had the
main event was Stone. Time? It was Stone Cold, and it was Stone Cold and Kane in a First Blood match was the main event.
Oh, that was that one. I'm getting. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Yeah, and then Austin lost the title, but then won it back the next night.
Yeah, on Raw, yeah.
I was so mad when he lost it that night.
And I know,
I was so depressed. I think school was out at that time. It was in June, but I was like, I was so depressed. And then Raw starts and they announce and then he gets it back. But getting back to Hell in the Cell.
If someone told me they've never seen wrestling before, I put on the 98 Hell in the Cell Undertaker vs. Mankind. I say, watch this.
He went off the top, which I guess was planned. That was a planned bump. And then they're hauling him out. And then he comes back and he climbs up. And if my memory is correct, he wasn't supposed to fall through the cage again. It just gave out.
I think they said it was supposed to slowly. He was supposed to go like one and it was supposed to break. And then another one was supposed to break more. And then like a third one, it was supposed to break through, but like softly was his plan. And then the first chokeslam, he just went right through it.
And they had a chair up there.
Yeah.
And the chair came down with him and then knocked his top tooth through his upper lip.
Yep. Into his nose.
Oh man, I remember that. That was so grotesque. Yep. And one of the funnier stories about that match was they had thumbtacks and he gets slammed on them. And then the match eventually ends and he's backstage getting checked out, you know, for like a concussion. And he still has the thumbtacks all in him.
Oh yeah.
And the Undertaker comes in to check on him. And the Undertaker's first name is Mark. His full name is Mark Calloway. And Mick Foley says to him, he says, "Hey, Mark, did we ever use those thumbtacks?" they're all stuck in them. It was funny.
Yeah, unreal. What a savage. Left on two stretches. Just gave everything.
He was so funny.
So good. So funny. Gave so many. Had so many great matches for, you know, his Royal Rumble match with Triple H, Madison Square Garden. I think that's 99. Okay. 99. Oh, it might be 2000. Might be actually Royal Rumble 2000. He has Cactus Jack. He has a great match with Triple H. More thumbtacks came out. He got pedigreed face down into the thumbtacks.
Oh no!
Yeah, that one's crazy.
And there was a match with The Rock where his kids were there, and he took like four chair shots.
Yeah,
and...
That's Royal Rumble. That's the year before. The Royal Rumble 99. Yeah, The Rock handcuffs his hands behind his back, hits him with about 10 chair shots in a row. He's turning his back to him, trying to run away. The Rock chases him down, hits him again.
That's so bad. I think they changed stuff after that to not do as many. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but...
and now you can't at all. You can't hit in the head at all.
Okay.
Chairs go. Now a chair comes out. It's to the belly, they go down, and then to the back.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because they had that class action suit in like 2017 or 18 with the CTE stuff. So, can't do chair shots. All right, who's your next one?
All right, my next one, we just mentioned him. I'm going with The Rock.
Okay.
You know, most people didn't like him. You know, wasn't a fan. He was at the Nation of Domination. He was a heel. And then he left them because, you know, he started to get his catchphrases, you know, that's the bottom line. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking and know your role and jabroni. I still call people jabroni to this day because of The Rock.
He would sing it to the tune of Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah. You know, and he was the people's champion, the people's elbow. Once he got over, he was just so over.
He had to be a heel to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when he got old, when he got over, I was there for it and I was all about him and I loved The Rock. And even though his epic matches with Stone Cold, I was always Stone Cold.
Yeah.
But other than that, I was a big Rock guy all the way.
My first job ever, starting when I was 15, was McDonald's. And I worked there for maybe a year, year and a half. And so many of the people there were wrestling fans too. So many of my coworkers. And we'd walk around and be like, hey, do you like Big Macs? And they'd go to answer it and be like, it doesn't matter if you like Big Macs. You know, so all day, all shift long, we would be doing that. Yep. Yeah.
It was, yep. He had so many. He was the best. You know, one of the absolute best on the mic, for sure.
Yeah. And I saw some clips. I can't remember specifics, but he'd get so many people to break character and just laugh. It's
just, yeah.
He'd be supposed to be a heel. So and he's good. Yeah. I guess I'm just more partial to Stone Cold, and that was kind of the rivalry.
Yeah.
I guess he finally did return the favor in, what, 2003? He put Rock over.
Yep, they had three WrestleMania matches, and Stone Cold won the first two, and then The Rock won the last one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The first two was in his prime, so
yeah, great matches, great matches.
Yeah. All right, let's just kind of move along here. Yeah. Oh, we're getting deep on my list here.
I know.
I'm actually gonna go. I'm going to go WCW.
Love it.
And I'm going to take Rey Mysterio.
Oh, okay. I love that.
Okay. Didn't know if I sniped you again. I don't
know. He wasn't on my list, but he damn well should have been, because that's a great pick.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really appreciate the Mexican Lucha Libre fighters until Guerrero. And I thought WCW, honestly, I mean, they did a lot of things really well when they were hot, but they had a great cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Jericho was big in that division for a little while. Oh, yeah. Dean Malenko. And of course, Mysterio. And
it was really what WWE at the time wasn't doing.
Yeah. And
that was really what they were nailing.
They tried it, and you know, they had like Taka Michinoku, but it was
fine, but they had Eddie Guerrero, you know, they had Rey Mysterio, Chris Jericho, Dean Malenko, and Dragon,
Ultimo Dragon,
Ultimo Dragon. I mean, they had really, really good guys,
and you know, and I didn't watch him win the title years later in 05 as it happened. I have gone back since and seen it.
Yeah,
but
that was like right after I stopped. I stopped watching probably like 2002, 2003. And then I got back into it. I just got back into it like 3 years ago. So there was a gap. I had a big gap too, but I've gone back and watched like all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and another thing about Taka Michinoku, do you remember his finishing move, the Michinoku driver?
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised they allowed that. I'm like, that.
Dude, yeah, they had some crazy finishes back then.
That could go sideways, because, I mean, some guys did. I mean, that Darren Drozdov guy got paralyzed.
Yep,
and
he did, yep.
And then, of course, Stone Cold with Owen Hart.
Owen, yeah.
And so, I don't know, but... But yeah, and Rey Mysterio still at it to this day and still looks good.
He had a match on Raw last night.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yep. And his son is the Intercontinental Champion right now.
Oh, wow.
His son's a huge star. He's awesome.
Okay.
He's a great heel.
Is he short like his dad?
No, he's tall.
He's tall.
He's like way bigger than Rey.
Oh, geez.
And coming up, he was like with Rey. And then he turned heel and turned against them.
Okay.
And calls him his deadbeat dad. And it's great. It's really good. Really good.
And they did a weird angle with Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah,
him and Eddie,
yeah. Yeah.
That was so weird.
They fought for his custody.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
So now Dom is like a heel like Eddie was. And he calls Eddie his real dad and he calls Ray his deadbeat dad. It's great. It's great angles.
Yeah. All right. Who you got next?
All right. My next one. I'm gonna go let's see. I'm gonna go a guy like you did with Ray. I'm gonna go Jeff Hardy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the Hardy Boys were the tag team for me of my era. From probably, I would say from, I don't know, 96 on, they were probably the best tag team that they had. So many crazy matches. I mean, putting people through tables, jumping off ladders, having the whole TLC feud with the Dudleys and Edge and Christian, and he always stood out as the number one guy in all those feuds that got the biggest pops, doing the Swanton bombs off the 20-foot ladders. And he's a guy that still resonates with people my age and people that watched him as, you know, the guy that just everyone loved every time he came out.
Yeah, he came in kind of at the end of my run, but yeah, they were definitely probably the most high-flying tag team of all time.
Yeah.
And that was probably the best era for tag team wrestling that there ever was. And
oh yeah, definitely.
I think because Edge and Christian and the Dudleys were there, that just helped make the Hardys even better because they had good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great pick. He wasn't on my list.
Yeah, yeah. They had the TLC at a SummerSlam and then the TLC at WrestleMania, I want to say 17. Great. Just fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic matches.
All right. So with my last pick, I am going to go with Owen Hart.
Oh, great pick.
Yeah. You know, he was such a great heel. He was funny. And, you know, listening to wrestlers like tell stories about him. Like the best one I heard was him and Davey Boy convinced Ahmed Johnson that he was going to go be on either Jay Leno or David Letterman that night. And he's like, yeah, Vince is going to talk to you about it, but you know, you're going to be the guy to go on. So Ahmed goes out and gets a suit. He's walking around in a suit, waiting for his limo to come get him. That never shows up. That was the best rib. And come to find out, Ahmed Johnson was like one of the biggest morons, you know, just not a good guy. And it was so disappointing because I really was a fan. You know, I rooted for him all the time.
Yeah, he had a great look.
First black guy to ever win the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
And I hated Goldust at the time too.
Yeah, and he had a great feud with Farouk.
Yeah, and they both like injured the hell out of each other various times. And I kept hearing stories how, like, I think it was WrestleMania where they did that, the Chicago street fight where the Legion of Doom came back. Probably, by the way, my favorite tag team of all time.
Okay.
But apparently when they were in that match he was fighting the Nation in that match with the Legion of Doom.
Yep.
And Farouk would just hit him with everything he could as hard as he could, just cause it was Ahmed.
Yeah.
Just gonna whatever weapons they had in the ring, yeah, he would just destroy Ahmed. So it was funny.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, but
fantastic.
I just really enjoy the stories. Like apparently they were like in a tour in England or Germany or somewhere. It was an overseas thing. And
yeah,
Triple H was supposed to go over against Owen, and Owen put him into a backslide and wouldn't let him out and won the match. just stole the match. And it was just, there's so many stories.
Yeah. That, and he was, you know, pretty much just as good as Brett. He was maybe even better. I mean, he had a little bit more of an off the top rope game than Brett did.
Yeah. More aerial, better on the mic as well. He was funny even as a heel.
He was very, yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about the screw job earlier. And, you know, every so often I'm like, well, how could they have avoided that? You know, how could, you know, Brett have dropped the title and you know, left, and that never happened. And my alternate theory here, hear me out. I'd love to like pitch this to Bret Hart. Here's what I would have done. And it might not sound brilliant at first, but the more I've kind of thought about it, I'm like, you know, this could have worked. Bret leaves Montreal with the title against Sean. It was a DQ finish, whatever the plan was. The next night on Raw, it would have been cool if Bret said, you know, this is probably my last match. I want to have it with my brother Owen. Drops the title to Owen Hart. Now that sets up an Austin-Owen feud going into WrestleMania 14. And I think that would have been just naturally a good thing. You know, they're both great on the mics.
Yeah, they had a feud already from him breaking his neck and stuff.
Yeah, and Sean, I mean, that match was good, and the Tyson angle really helped at WrestleMania. But Sean didn't really have a ton of heat going into it.
No.
You know? And it was a foregone conclusion that Austin was going to win. But I think Owen would have just been so much more hateable. And they had
Owen would have been great.
The neck thing, and then, you know, he ended up tragically dying a year or so later. But I just wonder, I just think history would be so much cooler if Owen would have held the belt one time. And maybe if that did happen, maybe the Blue Blazer gimmick never comes back and he never falls from the ceiling.
Yeah. You know? I love it. That's a great pitch.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
You know, and I remember I wasn't watching that night for some reason. I didn't get that pay-per-view, but I saw a news clip where they said a WWE wrestler had died, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but we didn't have the internet until like 2000 in my house.
Yeah.
And
like most.
And so I couldn't just like go online, and I called my friend. I'm like, oh my God, somebody died. And you know, and stuff wasn't necessarily quick to hit the internet, you know, right away. Sure.
Yeah.
But he calls me back maybe 20, 30 minutes later. And he goes, I just found out who it was. And I'm like, oh my God, who was it? And he said, Owen Hart. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, like it was just so, so sad. And like everybody cried, like,
oh yeah.
Like a couple of years before that, Brian Pillman died, and it was sad, but it wasn't. The guys never looked traumatized when they did the 10 bell salute.
Right.
And, you know, but everybody, I remember Mark Henry just bawling his eyes out.
Specifically for sure. Remember that?
Yeah.
He's actually told stories that he trained in the dungeon with Owen a lot. That Owen really trained him a lot in the dungeon and helped him a lot. Cause when Owen did join the Nation at a little time there, Mark Henry was like just starting.
Okay.
And said that Owen helped him a lot, and said that Owen was the funniest dude backstage, and that he would have beat up everybody too.
Yeah. I love a good Owen Hart story.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, if you want to like, I don't recommend, if you don't like, you know, this is for the audience. You know, if you don't like gruesome, tragic stuff, don't do it. But Val Venus gives a really good account of what happened that night. And so does Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, you try to make sense of it. And apparently his wife got like $20 million in the lawsuit. It was supposed to be an undisclosed amount, but over the years, I guess it's kind of leaked out. But yeah, just, I don't know. And his match with Bret Hart to open up WrestleMania 10.
One of the best ever for sure.
Was phenomenal. And it was such a cool story because I was kind of rooting for Bret to win the title later that night because Luger was going to get the first shot and then Bret faces the winner.
Yep.
So like the storytelling was just amazing. Like why would Bret lose going into that? And he did.
Yeah. He really put his brother over.
Yeah. And then the, I wasn't crazy about the cage match at WrestleMania 94, but it was kind of cool how the family was there and then all kind of got involved. And yeah. Bulldog hadn't even been on TV for a while. Yeah. And that was kind of his comeback. And I think the Bulldog had basically from then through that 3-year run, I'm guessing he probably had his best years of sobriety at that point. I mean, yeah, he was busy. They had angles for him all the time. They put a couple of different titles on him. So,
yep.
And then he had a run with Sean there for a little while. So,
yep.
But yeah, anyway, Owen was mine. Great so pick. Who's your last one?
My last pick, I'm going to go with a WCW guy. You know, if you think WCW in the 90s, you think NWO, and then you also think Sting.
Okay.
And, Sting's going to be my last pick. You know, even before he was the black and white, you know, when he was the, you know, kind of the green and he had the face paint and he had great feuds with Ric Flair, you know, in like the late 80s, early 90s. And then he changed to that kind of the Crow character. And he would sit up top with a bat and just watch, come down and just beat the hell out of whoever was in the ring and really won the crowd over and really kind of took the crowd back from NWO kind of. And, you know, he was the crowd, the fan favorite when he was going against NWO. They always wanted to see him come in and, you know, clear house on them. And Sting was great.
Yeah, I like the Crow gimmick more than the early 90s surfer dude thing that he had going. And one of the cool things in history, and I only learned it in the last few years, the night Hogan turned heel, it wasn't a done deal going into the night. Because Hogan, similar to Bret Hart, was like, well, if I turn heel, I'm not selling much merch. It's going to hurt my bottom line. So Sting was actually the backup plan if Hogan wasn't going to do it. And I don't know how that would have worked. Like Sting, similar to Bret Hart, was not good on the mic. So
Right. That's kind of why his character just didn't talk.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as much as I hate Hogan, it kind of had to be Hogan. And and then in Starrcade 97, apparently Hogan was supposed to drop the title to Sting, but being the politician that he was, didn't do it. And Sting was great. Sting versus Undertaker with their, you know, goth gimmicks in their prime. It's too bad we never got to see that.
I know.
Yeah.
That was a shame.
So, all right, we're pushing an hour. I didn't think it'd take that long to go through here, but let's just spend like 10 minutes. Like, if you're going to watch a pay-per-view tonight from the 90s, which one is it?
If I had to pick one, I think I would go with, I think I would probably have to say WrestleMania 10. I think maybe the number one. You get Bret and Owen starting it off with one of the best matches of all time, and then technically, and then you get, you know, Shawn and Razor with the first ladder match ever, which is fantastic. You get two Yokozuna matches. You get Bret winning at the end. It's Madison Square Garden. You know, it's just great.
That was that's probably my second favorite WrestleMania of the 90s. Again, I really like WrestleMania 8. That's not my favorite one. I'll get to my favorite one after, but Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper. Yeah. I mean, Piper was a legend, and I guess I didn't realize it until after his career was over, but he very seldom put anybody over.
Yeah.
I respected Bret. I can't think of another match where he got pinned 1-2-3. I'm sure there's got to be one or two, but yeah. And it was such a creative finish, you know, where he's in the sleeper hold, which was Piper's finisher.
And he used the turnbuckle.
He kicked off the ropes. Yeah. Bret got the title back. Yeah. That was just such a cool moment. And
yeah, that's great.
You know, Randy Savage versus Flair, which I covered. Yep. Hogan versus Sid Justice with the Warrior running in. And, you know, as an adult, by the way, I don't like the Ultimate Warrior.
I put him on the list, but yeah.
What a moron.
Yeah, he's an absolute idiot in so many ways.
After 1991, he just was useless.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my favorite pay-per-view of all time is actually SummerSlam 92. And the greatest match I ever saw, in my opinion, was Brett versus Bulldog.
Yeah, Wembley. And
just such a great technical match. And, you know, Bulldog ended up going over.
Yeah.
And one of the things about it was apparently he was all coked out on drugs. And Brett had been trying to get in touch with him for like a month. And I guess Bulldog was out with an injury. And so he just hadn't been on TV. But he was like literally doing crack with apparently Jim the Anvil Neidhart. And
yeah.
Doing all kinds of bad drugs. And
yeah.
He showed up and, you know, he was kind of heavy, and you can kind of, now I can kind of see it. I didn't know it back then.
Right.
But I'm like, yeah, wow, he does look out of shape. And Brett went through the match with him and the night before, and Brett was like, he choreographed the match. Like, that's just the type of guy he was. Some guys just winged it and called it on the spot. But
But
by like the third or fourth move, Bulldog whispered to Brett, he says, "I'm fucked." He goes, I don't remember anything. So Brett had to call it, and it still ended up being the greatest match I ever saw.
Right. Definitely the greatest SummerSlam match ever, for sure.
Yeah. And the match with with Macho Man and Warrior, I guess that was a good Warrior match.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I forgot the finish. It was a count out or a disqualification or something. Savage, I think Warrior won it, but Savage kept the belt. And
yeah, I think it is a count out.
The storyline going into it was Ric Flair was in one of their corners and nobody knew which one it was. And WWF at the time did a great job trying to make it seem like he's going to be in Savage's corner. No, wait, maybe the Warriors. And it was just such great storytelling. And so that was a great match. Legion of Doom opening up against Money Inc.
Ted DiBiase deserves a shout out. One of the best heels of all time.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. The stuff, his promos and stuff is just so, so good.
Easy to hate, but
yeah. When he brought a kid out and told him, "If you can dribble the ball, if you can dribble this basketball 10 times, I'll give you $500 and let him get to 9 and slapped it away.
So, I hope they compensated that kid with something by the end. But yeah, he was just such a great bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read that his son's going to go to prison, I think.
Really?
Yeah. And his son was in the WWE.
Yeah, he was. While. Yeah.
Yeah. He apparently stole money from the state like during the pandemic or something. But yeah, that sucks. But it was just such a cool setting too. You know, an outdoor stadium. Right. WrestleMania 9 was after that. So yeah, I guess it was pretty unique and definitely my favorite. You know, if I'm gonna watch something tonight, that's definitely one.
Yeah. My favorite match, single match, would be Austin, Bret Hart, WrestleMania 13.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my number one match for sure. It's
that's up there. It's like a 1A and 1B, but
yeah.
Bret was in so many great matches. I mean, the Iron Man match, the opener with Owen, Steve.
Yeah. He has a few. There's a In Your House. When they were doing the In Your Houses.
Yeah.
There's an In Your House, the Final Four, it's called. That's one of my favorites because it was after the 97 Rumble where Bret Hart eliminates Austin and Austin sneaks back in
and wins it.
And so there was a vacant title. I think maybe Michaels had to give it up or something.
Yeah, he lost his smile.
Right. And they had the final four that were in the Rumble before Austin cheated, and it was Vader, Undertaker, Austin, and Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And they had a fatal four-way at the in your house. And the winner got the title, and Bret
won. And then lost it the next night on Raw to Sid.
Yeah.
That was so crazy. Like, yeah. And And then, so they end up putting it on Undertaker because I guess they just, there weren't many options and he was a safe guy to put it on. And and then so they go into WrestleMania. Now Brett's working with Steve and they're like, oh, and by the way, it's a submission match. And Steve's like, well, what the hell? I'm not a submission wrestler. And Brett's like, well, I'll show you a couple moves and this and that. And, you know, but then they, at the last second, they said no DQ. So that allowed more freedom in the match. And it ended up being what it was. Credit to Brett for doing it, you know, for making it that. But yeah, that was 97. Like, if you ask me what the GOAT year was for WWE, 92 was so good. Like Royal Rumble 92, I think that was the best Rumble.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know if it was the best WrestleMania, but it was a really good one.
Yep.
And then SummerSlam 92, and I think Survivor Series was a little weak, but some weird stuff happened where the Ultimate Warrior got fired before it, so he wasn't in the main event.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mr. Perfect went from heel to babyface. But I don't know. That was a good year, but then 1997 was so good, too, because that was a good Rumble. Right. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Stone Cold cheating to win, that was great storytelling, you know? And, you know, it was an okay WrestleMania. SummerSlam was really good. You know, it sucked that, you know, Austin got dropped on his head. And they had that weird, if that match could have been normal, it would have been a great match.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brett versus Undertaker. That was just such, I don't know. What was the GOAT year in your opinion?
I think for me, it would probably be 90. I think maybe 98, the next year when Stone Cold had his run as champ. And, and that, I'm trying to think of who won the Rumble in 90. Oh, because he won it in 98 again.
He did, yeah. He
won it in 98 again, right? And then he won at the WrestleMania in Boston, and then he had that whole year. I'm trying to think of SummerSlam.
He fought the Undertaker.
The Undertaker at SummerSlam. Yep.
Yeah, that was at the Garden, and I guess that was like the highest grossing pay per view of all time.
Really?
That might have been the height of the Attitude Era.
Yeah. I love that year. Yeah.
Royal Rumble 94 was good with them both going over.
The finish, the finish is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. And yeah.
They did such a perfect job not knowing who hit the floor first. Yep. So that was perfect. And the cool thing about that was Vince apparently hadn't made up his mind which one was going to go over at Mania. So when they kept announcing each one as the winner, like you could hear the crowd pop and Brett was getting the biggest pop.
Oh, yeah.
So, perhaps that's what won him over. And the other thing too, I read something really interesting. I can't remember if I showed this to you or not, but you know, a lot of people like to debate why Lex Luger wasn't, you know, he wasn't over more than he was and why he wasn't given the belt. And someone just kind of speculated he had like the lamest theme music of all time. It was some patriotic thing and it didn't really fire people up. They're like, if they just literally gave him a cooler entry theme,
sometimes that's all it takes. Yeah,
maybe just got rid of the red, white and blue, or maybe just gave it a different look. He could have been, because Hogan, like a big part of it was his theme music.
Yeah, for sure. You
know, his promos weren't, you know, super great after like year three. He'd be like, you know something, Mean Gene. And then he'd be praying to the gods and swimming across whatever big river was in that city. And, you know,
all the greats have, you know, like I said with Austin at the glass break, like all the greats have a song where you immediately know who it is.
Yeah.
You know, Brett had like you know, the screech or whatever it was to start, the long guitar riff, or you know, the Rock had his thing to start, and Undertaker had the gong, and you know, a lot of guys have that immediate, you know who it is.
Brett did a shoot interview not that long ago, and I think Jim Ross and Jim Cornette were there. Jim Cornette's kind of a good, if it's the right topic, that dude just goes off. He's
the best,
And sometimes he'll just get up on his high horse, and it's hit or miss, but I do. And I think he's honest. I don't think he lies. Like, I believe all of his accounts of stuff. But so it was like a, it was a shoot interview, but it was in an arena, you know, a small arena.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
And Brett wasn't, I don't think he was announced to be there. And then the lights go out and then his music hits and the crowd still pops. So man. But yeah. And yeah, so that was 94 was, you know, one of the better Rumbles.
Yep. And then WrestleMania 10 was 94.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. That whole year was good. And then he dropped the title to Backlund. That was weird.
That was dumb.
But they had to do it because they didn't want him to lose to Diesel. Like, that would take his heat. So they put it on Backlund for like 2 days. Like, that was like the most, like, what the hell did I just watch ever?
Yeah.
Backlund got the title. Yeah. So anyway. All right. Well, you know what? I think we'll wrap it on that.
That was great.
I have no idea how this is going to go. The audience. Give us some feedback. If you guys think we should cover something else, just
Let us know.
Comment in the comments. It won't necessarily be me on everyone or Doug. You know, some of the other guys will mix in, but just trying to just kind of keep things rolling here. Yep. You know,
that was fun.
You know, probably right around now we're all getting baseball fever. I mean, we're what, less than a month from pitchers and catchers. So I guess tomorrow or today, if depending on when you're listening, on Wednesday they're gonna introduce Ranger Suarez. I hope he doesn't take whatever Martin Perez's number was. A couple of guys have done that.
I hate when they have bad numbers and bothers.
Yeah, 54. Just don't do it.
That stinks. Yeah. That number stinks. That's a football number.
Pick something cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we'll be back as stuff develops. Everyone, have a good rest of your week. Take care.